Welcome back, ladies and gents, to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Eastern Metro Detroit area. It's Teaming Up with CMD. I'm your host, Connor. As always, with the V of CMD, Vladdy, what's going on, man? Welcome back to another episode of this fine show.
Not much. We're kind of in the middle of the hell week of 90 plus every day, and it's awful because anytime I go outside to walk between buildings at work, I just get hit. I'm baking within seconds, and so that's not fun. But I'm doing well. We got some golf this weekend. I'm excited for that. But nothing really noteworthy like previous weekend. So maybe I'll turn it over to you. If not, I'd be down to go right into the sports.
Yeah, no, I don't have much. I guess the heat, like here, what it's been this week makes you appreciate how good like Michigan summers are normally, like in that kind of 75 to 85 range and like very cool in the mornings. Because this is just isn't it. Once you get over 90, I start to get out of the equation. It's like just walking from my car to the parking lot at work, which is, I don't know, 200 steps. Fucking makes me sweat, and that's just not okay. Yeah, that's kind of all I got. We're gonna get after it in a four-man scramble this weekend between we're on opposite squads. It should be interesting. Maybe we'll have somewhat of a recap of that next week. But yeah, let's get into the topics. We've got the U.S. Open recap, and as always, the NBA, our final NBA of the year, and the NHL talk. Should we start with the U.S. Open?
Sure.
That ended Sunday. Bryson DeChambeau wins his second major, his second U.S. Open, on what's going to go down as one of the more interesting, more controversial, more exciting finishes in history, in U.S. Open history, in recent U.S. Open history, in recent major history, since we've kind of been actual golf fans. This is one of the best. The only really true ones that even come close are the Mito Pereira into the water, Justin Thomas, Zalatoris playoff is really the only thing in the last, I don't know, 3 years maybe that has even come close to this. You had Rory and DeChambeau in the DeChambeau in the final group. Rory, I believe he was two shots behind him going into the day.
Three.
He at started one point, Bryson gets it up to two. Three behind. He gets it up to the – Bryson gets it up, keeps that three for a couple holes. They kind of go back and forth. They're tied. Rory all of a sudden has a two-stroke lead with, I believe, four or five holes to play. And he bogeys three of the last four. He misses a two-and-a-half-footer and a three-and-a-half-footer. Essentially two of the last three holes to lose Bryson DeChambeau, who couldn't find a fairway the entire Sunday. I don't know if you saw this, that he switched drivers just for that Sunday, and it was a driver he hadn't swung before. I'm not sure why you would do that when you're leading by three strokes in a major. But he did that, and he couldn't find the fairway all day to give him like the one, I guess, blemish of his performances. He didn't find the fairway the entire day. Was included on 18. He's behind a tree. He's like, he's got roots all over the place. There's the gallery, the stands on his left, and he bump and runs it essentially in the bunker. Not necessarily what he was trying to do, obviously. He has about a 60-yard bunker shot to the hole, and he hits an absolute dime to 3 feet, makes the putt, one of the best shots I've ever seen, given the situation. I guess that's what happened. The thoughts, and where do you want to start as far as what this was and how exciting it was?
So first I'll address the driver thing. I want to believe that I heard he damaged his usual driver on the range after round three or in the warm-up for round four. And so he was kind of forced into doing that. I don't think it was a voluntary choice. As for the U.S. Open, before I get into specifics about each individual person, everything I complained about last week about, oh my God, every year they tell us it's going to be the super hard course and these guys come out and shoot lights out, that was not true. Pinehurst played very, very tough. It was a lot of scrambling. There was some luck of the draw you mentioned. guys landing in the native grass in the fairway, and where's my ball gonna end up? And then you also said this is probably the best major I can recall, up there with the Zalatoris playoff year. It had everything. So kudos there. I mean, going back to the kind of the U.S. Open hard, not hard, easy, not easy thing. I want to say there was only seven or eight golfers that finished under par. So
Yep.
yeah, that was the exact opposite of Valhalla. That was so much fun to watch. And I actually saw people complaining about it, and I'll get to it towards the end, and I want to get your thoughts on it. But I say we kind of get right into the kind of each individual person and just kind of talk about the standing, what happened, how it happened. So I'll just quickly start, and not that this really matters in any form. Scottie Scheffler is indeed a human being.
Yep.
He played bad golf, or at least bad golf by his standards, for the first time in probably 2 years. So go team, Scotty. Maybe grow the beard back.
Yeah, and
But
that haircut was awful.
But outside of that, this was a major, or the entire major was about two guys, Bryson and Rory. So where do we start?
Yeah, I guess we should start by giving the kudos to Bryson. I mean, talk about a 180 in terms of not only just his public perception, but his play. I think a year or two ago, this was a guy that was really struggling. I know he had the wrist injury, and kind of similar to Brooks Koepka now, only a year behind, was kind of one of those things where you thought he was just a splash in your kind of golf memory. He won a major in 2020, where he kind of just bombed the ball. If you saw the clips of him from that major, you wouldn't believe how massive he looked compared to what he did now. He looked like a cartoon character, quite frankly. He was always this nerdy science guy that people just kind of got annoyed with. He couldn't really take a joke, and he's totally changed that. He's changed his play. He changed his public perception. I've never seen a guy address the crowd, address the gallery so much and so well. I don't know if it's necessarily a good or a bad thing, but I would say a good thing when you win. It's probably going to be criticized the second he loses for how much he does interact with the fans on the actual golf course in on Sunday of a major. But that's neither here nor there. This is not a course, I think I said last week, that wasn't necessarily built for Bryson. This wasn't going to be with all the native land. It wasn't going to be a bombing drive place like he did. He tried to. He missed every fairway on Sunday. And he was able to show that he is much more than that. He's a complete golfer. He looks just healthy now and in shape. And the move to, we talk about it all the time with these majors, is guys that have been hurt and guys that have benefited from joining LIV. He is number one on that list for benefited from joining LIV. He can go and kind of do his own thing as this YouTube golfer, build his brand, his personality. He's able to laugh at himself. It seems like he's gotten rid of a lot of the yes men that were kind of in his life that, maybe built up that ego to this, I'm this super nerdy golf guy. And he's just a well-built robot of a golfer. He's kind of one of those guys you just look at and you go, yeah, that guy does nothing else besides golf in his free time. And that's okay. You need guys like that. And that's what Bryson DeChambeau is. And that he showed that this past weekend.
Kind of touching on a little some of the points you mentioned, the fans. Yeah, I mean, he's stopping to sign autographs. He's talking to the crowds, the galleries, the patrons, whatever you want to call them, whatever they're officially called by the U.S. Open. Sitting there reading putts with them, high-fiving everyone on his way in between tee boxes. There really isn't anyone like that. And I know you kind of mentioned, is that going to be ever criticized? I don't necessarily think so, because I don't. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. Now, is there ever going to come a time where maybe that's viewed as a, hey, Bryson, maybe we should spend more time thinking about the shot we're going to hit and less time signing little Timmy's the hat? Sure, but I don't think it's ever going to be viewed as some negative thing.
This is what I think, though, is it could eventually be seen as like a, okay, we get it. You're trying to pull this card. Like, this isn't genuine anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I
he's just doing
disagree.
this. He is just doing that. Like, maybe he is right now, but I think you continue to do this, people start to be like, okay, this isn't just genuine. This is somebody that's trying to change his persona, the way he's perceived, I guess.
I think it's the exact opposite, actually. I think he does this because it is genuine. I
No,
think
I do at this point. I'm saying people could start to think that if
I
it goes
disagree.
awry.
I mean,
You
I
think?
think the, like I said, the way he interacts with the fans, there's nothing manufactured about that. There's no,
No.
hey, pose for the camera and then let me wipe the smile off my face. I don't, as long as it stays like that. Now, you're right. If he starts doing photo ops on the 13th tee box, and as soon as that camera's done flashing, he turns around, he's like, go fuck yourself, like, get away from me. Yeah, then it'll turn around like, hey, like, okay, this guy's being a little bit of a priss. But
But he
I
kind of
think,
was that guy before, is my point. Like, does he go back? Like, it wouldn't be hard to go back to it eventually.
see, I don't think he was ever that guy. I mean, the guy he was before was just like, not in the way Brooks Koepka thought he was better than golf, but he almost thought, he's like, well, I'm gonna show up and there's so much untapped potential in the science of this sport, and I'm smarter than you, and I'm gonna figure out the ways to do it. I don't think it was ever, oh, well, I don't like these people. 'Cause I think that's where he's turned the perception around, is he's just kind of, he, not even, maybe not accepted, but he just kind of realized the sport is for the fans. Everything that they have makes it, or everything they can offer makes it better, and he wants to connect with them. I don't think there's any ulterior motives. It's just who he is. I mean, I don't know if you saw the videos afterwards. He's letting fans touch the cup. You
Yeah,
have
that's
him
cool.
sitting there hitting glow in the dark golf balls with the cup sitting there with other glow in the dark golf balls. He's, based on the house he was staying at for the week, you had he you brought all the neighbors over. Man, that's the exact opposite of someone who's trying to like manufacture this stuff. Because that guy, like I said, he takes a quick picture, the camera's gone, and he goes to hide away. I think he's totally for it. So
But like
I
he
don't.
was the guy that was having people kicked out of a golf tournament for saying, let's go Brooksy at him. Like I'm saying, like where it is quite the turnaround in that he seemed like not necessarily prissy, but like the guy that was socially unaware of that they're not laughing at you, they're laughing with you thing. And he took that as laughing out at you for the longest time. And now he's come around and matured on that and kind of realized the social cues and the social relationship between him and the fans. So
Sure, I
that's
just don't realize how you claiming that he continues to be like that, it turns again and people hate him for it. That's the part I don't understand. Maybe I misunderstood. Maybe I
yeah,
didn't.
no, I'm saying more like people could get sick of it, not him specific. It's not him changing his motive.
Yeah, I don't see sick. I don't see
Because
people getting sick of him having fun.
let's go to a guy who is, in my opinion, completely changed his public image in the last year for the negative. And that's the guy who lost this in Rory McIlroy. Do you have anything on Bryson before we move on?
No, I could write a book about Rory, so I'm excited to get into that.
I'll start with like, I think this is a guy, I actually don't, the running away, obviously he was reported by the time Bryson had the trophy, he was already on his plane or whatever. He kind of scurried out of the parking lot, screeching the tires. I don't have as big of a problem with it as I think you're going to. I don't love it. It's not a good look. But he's a competitor. And like, I think what do you want him to do? Hand the trophy to Bryson DeChambeau? It's more just like, it's that on top of I was Mr. PGA. And now I've kind of had to revert back to it. And now I kind of talk shit about the PGA because they won't let me back on the board. I'm just this thing that's bigger than golf. And well, on the biggest stage, when you have a chance to win, not only do you royally choke, but you look like not a leader, not someone that should be an ambassador for the sport or an ambassador for the PGA Tour. That's not how you act. That's not how you act. And in my mind, this whole LIV PGA thing has only made him look negative. And that he was this fan favorite that was just like, oh, the young Irish kid that hits in a mile. He's a ginger, whatever. He's got the cute Irish accent. He's this little Irish guy. He's good. He's winning. To like now, he's like Tiger. It's like Rory almost. It seems like and. I don't necessarily think many people see him in that happy-go-lucky sight anymore. I think he is still overall, probably relatively speaking, a fan favorite, but I think a lot of people have turned on him, and this is only going to continue with this performance.
So I agree with everything you say, and I want to sit here and be proud of the fact that I have been on this. I fucking hate Rory McIlroy train for 2 years. And it all started with the kind of putting on the Captain PGA suit and trying to get mad at other people for deciding to make more money than him, and then claiming all these false accusations about, oh my God, the Saudis are the worst thing ever, while he actively played in tournaments in Saudi Arabia. And then
Right.
all of this is, these guys should, they don't deserve to breathe oxygen. We can never let them back on the tour. And I love every second of every development that's happened, because like you said, he's had to start walking back those comments because he knows eventually there will be a merger and we will all be together again. And I cannot continue to sit there and treat these people like rats, or not even treat them, just to try and talk about them as if that's what they are and that they are beneath me. I love the fact that he has blown, and I say blown, or maybe not blown, the two majors he's finished second in over the last couple of years. I take pride in the fact that he lost both of those to LIV golfers. It genuinely makes me happy.
He has 4 second places in majors in the last 2 years.
Well then I guess I was thinking of the Cam Smith though, but I didn't realize it was that good for him for being Mr. Consistent, and even better that he hasn't won one.
Last year's U.S. Open and last year's Masters.
Okay. Yeah. So perfect. Even better. I take pride in the fact that he lost that major the way he did. It could not have happened to a better person at a better time in a better manner. To go 496 for 496 within 3 feet for the season, and then basically miss two of those less than 3 foot putts in three holes to blow your major. I genuinely hope he had a mental breakdown. Now you talked about the manner in which he left the course. I also didn't have a problem with him declining media interviews. Like, what are they going to sit
Yes.
there and ask him? Like, I hate the media more than I hate Rory. The media, they don't do anything other than divide. That's how they sell their, that's how they make their money, is sell stupid click links and twist questions around and not even include full answers so they can make the recipients or the athletes look like bad people. So good for him. The media is disgusting. They would have said one thing, and I'm sure his answer would not have been accurately reported by any of the people who were listening. So good for him for spurning them to not say anything to Bryson. 50-50. The sportsman in everyone that you wish that they did what Bryson did with Xander, where it's, hey, I thought I had a chance to be in this. You made a great putt. Congratulations. Here's your champ, or not here's your championship, but congratulations, you're a worthy winner. I had an issue with the skirting the tires. How excited can you be to leave that you have to sit there? And again, it's not some burnout. He didn't leave rubber marks, but
Yeah.
what are you doing? Just drive away. Why do you have to sit there and hammer the gas pedal? So
Tension.
I thought that was hilarious. I hate everything about Rory McIlroy. I'm proud to say it. I'll wear it like a badge. I hope that man never wins a major again. And honestly, I kind of hope he continues to get second places and lose in just outstandingly dumb fashion, because he's awful. The 2 years, again, you mentioned the PGA Tour board, and I'm sure he feels so betrayed because he sat there and said, like, I'm gonna stick up for these guys, and they sat there and stabbed him in the back. Good. Fuck you, Rory. I love it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was gonna end with I'll kind of give him the one on 18. It was a little farther and it was a slider, and you can see him mouth to his caddy. It just broke more than I thought. The one on 16 was that's one you never even have to putt with your buddies because it's straight down the hill, it's 2 feet long. That's inside the leather. That one was bad, and that's called choking, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, again, I'm just gonna I'm the last thing I'm gonna say about this is, couldn't happen to a better person in a better way.
Yeah. Just what an ending. What a great event. You mentioned Pinehurst. I thought it was perfect. I know some people complain about it being like quote borderline too hard.
Oh,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you mentioned about the course itself. The one thing that I heard that people were complaining about, and I see both sides of the argument, was they specifically mention how Bryson missed, as you said, Bryson missed, I think it was like 11 fairways out of 15 holes on the day. And pretty much every time he kind of got bailed out by a decent enough lie to be able to put a
Yeah.
club through it. And so a lot of the arguments were, well, that's not what the US Open should penalize, missing the fairway. You shouldn't, it shouldn't be a luck of the draw. You should absolutely find yourself, throw some fescue in there. I guess I wanted to see what your take was on that is. Do you see the argument? Do you agree with one side, or is it kind of just wishy-washy for you?
I mean, I see the argument, but I definitely don't agree with that side. 'Cause like I think it balances out in that it is luck of the draw. It's part of that, the character of that course in Pinehurst. And obviously, I don't know, because it worked like the 50-50 chance works both ways, because Rory hit one early in the round, probably the third or fourth hole, that was maybe 10 feet under the hole, and he ended up in the native about 50 yards away from the hole, which is ungodly unfair. But like it just kind of works out that way to me, and that it evens out in the end, I think. And part of the challenge isn't just, oh, you should have really long rough and that's it. Like I don't think it's that simple when you're like trying to measure how hard a golf course is. I think it's how it plays as a whole. And I do think so, like a shot like that for Rory, it was kind of borderline too much to an extent. I think that some of those greens, especially early on in the week, I do think it dried out a little bit over the week because it was sunny and hot the entire time. But I thought it was perfect. And you mentioned how you wanted it before to be even par, and how you kind of, it seems like you kind of came around and that this was what you wanted. You know, 7 to 8 guys below par. The winner is at -6. He shoots +1 on Sunday and is still able to win a major. I think that's exactly as hard as you can make a golf course for the state of golf right now with these players and how good they are, where the technology is, what they can do. I just think this is kind of exactly what you want out of a US major in terms of difficulty.
Completely agree. Like I said, I was very, I complained about it before the tournament about how every single year they tell us it's going to be the hardest thing ever. And then half the field is sitting there competing at a cut line of -2. And then you've got these winners in the double digits. That was so much fun to watch. And it is nice kind of seeing the reverse side of golf where, as you mentioned, there's a lot more scrambling. You saw some of the things that you mentioned, some of the things that Bryson was doing, some of the locations he ended up in. They're like, yeah, well, we've only seen one guy all tournament go up and down from here. And then he hits some crazy chip that ends up 5 feet away and he sinks his putt. And it's like, wow, that's incredibly hard. And it's just, I think it was nice seeing a different side of golf as opposed to that, as we've mentioned, the typical bomb it down there. Pick up a wedge in your hand, spin it to 6 feet, and walk in a birdie putt. So it was nice to see the other side of it.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say about Bryson too is like on the other side and him scrambling is what's so impressive to me is those wedges are like as long as a normal driver. Like
Yeah.
he's like it's absurd. He doesn't bend anything at all, and to hit like bunker shots and wedge shots like that is just very impressive and very unique. So moving on, I guess we can do the NHL because I think that'll be the quickest. We have a series, folks. It's 3-2 now. Last time we talked, I believe it was still 3-0. Yeah, because they won Saturday and they won last night. After a 8-1 schlonking in Edmonton, one of those games, and we'll get to it with the NBA, where I think you go down 2-0 pretty early and you're the Panthers and you're like, yeah, we're not going to necessarily mail it in, but like, let's go win this in Sunrise, you know, on Monday night or Tuesday night, at our home ice. And I think that's kind of what happened. McDavid went crazy. It was just all Edmonton. Edmonton acted like they won it all, not the team, but the fans. The city was going crazy, and I guess they haven't had much to root for. Maybe not in the Connor McDavid era because they have been a playoff team and made deep runs here the last few years, but overall as a franchise since, you know, Gretzky was on the team in the late 80s. So I get that. And then Tuesday night, last night, a very, very entertaining game. Was called Nashville for some reason. Edmonton goes up 4-1 early. McDavid, 3 early points. And then Matthew Tkachuk has kind of a game for him. And he's kind of been invisible in this series prior to that. And Sorry, Florida gets back in it 4-3. They score two goals, and most of that third period is kind of just back and forth. A lot more Florida than Edmonton. It looks like Florida's going to have a chance to tie it, and who gets it done? But Connor McNasty McDavid gets that go-ahead goal, wins it 5-3, and sends it back to Edmonton Friday night. I don't know. It's Edmonton's turned it around. Those are kind of the games, 5-3, 8-1. Those are kind of the high-scoring games that Edmonton wants to play and Florida doesn't this time of year. My thing is like I said, this time of year, are you going to be able to play two more games at that pace, at that kind of offensive go, go, go? I'm not so sure. With that said, Edmonton has been a crazy place to play at. They clearly, fan base-wise, really want it, that they're going to have a shot in game six. And if they do, once you go to game seven, I always say it's cards on the table. It's just a shoot in the dark. Anything can happen type thing. So that's the state of the NHL real quickly, I guess, in two games. We can move on to the NBA where a champion was actually crowned.
Unfortunately, I mean, their champion was crowned, good for them, but unfortunately, this was one of the worst NBA finals I can remember. There was, I think, one game that was pseudo close, which I believe was game three. That's pretty much it. Everything else was just trading blowouts. It is kind of how I thought the series would go. It was a team versus a player. I mentioned this last week, and I figured, I think I said Bo or Dallas will be lucky to get back to Boston. And I think you actually encompassed it perfectly when you were talking about the Edmonton going up 2-0 early in game four, where it's like, yeah, we're down 2-0, but why should we sit here, expend copious amounts of energy trying to come back from this, which we believe we can do it, but why risk an injury? Why risk something, whatever it might be? If a couple pucks break our way, or if in the NBA's perspective, couple shots go our way, and you know what, maybe we get this down to 10, 15 points, we can re-engage and actually try. If not, we'll pull our starters for the fourth quarter. We'll see you guys back in Boston, and we'll cook you then. And that's exactly what happened. All of the Celtics' key players were resting in the fourth quarter. At some point, Dallas did the same. It became those last 12 minutes were a formality of a blowout of a game, and they went back to Boston where we saw another blowout. I wish I could kind of sit here and talk more high level basketball, but I can't. It was the themes of the series stayed the same throughout the series. It was, we're gonna let Luka be Luka. He's gonna get his points, and nobody else is gonna beat us. And that's exactly what happened. Boston played incredibly well. They are the poster child for modern basketball. Five guys, all can defend, all can shoot. You run this motion five out offense. You can do whatever you want to do. It is the again. It's the poster child for modern basketball. I guess I remember talking about this. I took a look at some of the Celtics moves this past offseason, kind of how they got to where they got. And so they effectively traded Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon, and Robert Williams. And they turned those three players into Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, and most importantly, they were able to keep Derek White. Those were kind of their big moves from the past offseason, where I think the Robert Williams and Porzingis thing is maybe the biggest one, because while Porzingis might not be as good of a rim protector as Robert Williams was, what Porzingis can give you both ways absolutely outweighs Robert Williams on the offensive end, because he was kind of lob threat and sit under the post, which made him a little bit easier to guard in previous years. They bring Porzingis in, they're running the five out. You can't really sit there and unless you can match up with him body for body, you're going to get kind of exposed. The Jrue Holiday thing, he is kind of one of the more underrated players of the generation, if you will. His second ring now, first one coming with the Bucks, good for him. I'm sure for Boston, it was tough seeing Marcus Smart go. He was always kind of one of those fan favorite, even the leader, if you will, from a vocal standpoint, where yes, Brown and Tatum were more talented and put up more stats than he did, but Marcus Smart was always kind of your Draymond Green, if you will, where the team's energy came from him. So I'm sure that was not fun, and that was a little bit of a gamble trading that kind of heart and soul away, but I think that kind of forced Brown and Tatum to step up into more of an active leadership role. kudos to the Boston Celtics. From what I'm told from our resident friend who is Boston super fan, all of those guys are under contract for next season, so I would expect them to wake up next year or next June in the finals again, and we'll see who's playing them. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, like, where does this team go down then? Because it was a dominant playoff run. They only lose three games the entire playoffs. They were in first place in the East by a lot. I know it's not, it's maybe like you said, because it's not the true. I mean, Tatum and Brown are, all NBA players, but I don't necessarily think they're quite to that super, like, you're never going to remember a Jason Tatum-led Celtics. That could change. He's only 26 years old. But it's not like a LeBron or a Magic or a Jordan or like one of those names where you remember. But it is one of the more complete teams, all five, I think, that they should go down in some kind of conversations. At least the best team, I think, since the Warriors to win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to discount the Denver Nuggets of last season, because I think that had Denver
Okay,
been the
I'll give you
team to,
that.
no, I mean, I'm not saying the Celtics are somehow worse. I'm just saying that if I look back at it, I think that Denver team, because they had the superstar that we just said in Jokic, they had the supporting cast with
Yep.
Jamal Murray, with Michael Porter Jr., with some of those kind of the 3-and-D wings, if you will, that everybody's so desperately seeking in basketball is. I think the Nuggets were probably similar to them, but if you start going behind that, they're probably better than the Warriors team that beat a lesser Celtics team in 2022. They're almost
Yep.
certainly better than that Bucks team. They're almost certainly better than that Lakers
Bucks
team, and
Lakers.
I think the Raptors maybe get a slight diss to their title because the Warriors fell apart physically in it, where I don't think people give them as much credit. Because that team, when you look back at it, once again, kind of built like the Boston Celtics. A bunch of guys that can play both ways, just going to come at you in waves, and can you deal with us? Again, if the Warriors were healthy, do they beat them? Of course. But they weren't, and I think that's why people kind of maybe take away a little bit of the flowers, if you will, for that Raptors team. And then obviously, yeah, once you get back to the prime Warriors, I think they were probably better just on stardom alone.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to add on the NBA Finals is Luka Doncic. I know we mentioned that he necessarily wasn't the problem for most of the series, but and I had a feeling this would happen. Kind of a guy, at least for me, that's totally changed his public perception too. He comes off as whiny, not a team player. Essentially what Kyrie Irving was 5 years ago. Is what he kind of comes off as now. In game three, he fouls out with 6 or 7 minutes left. He looks at the bench and asks them to challenge it. It's all whining and pouting, and it's never on me. I don't know. It's something to look at. Is he a true superstar? Again, still so young, but things need to change in his approach. I know he's a great player for him to actually want, if he wants to be a champion, for him to be a champion.
Yeah, I think with the Luka thing, my biggest takeaways were the amount of foul hunting he does.
Yes.
It wasn't quite at the late 2010s James Harden, where this guy was taking 20 free throws a night. It wasn't that bad, but every time he kind of drives into the paint, it's I'm gonna bump into you. I'm gonna initiate some contact. There again, the whining was absolutely there. I think the biggest thing was the exposure of Luka Doncic on the defensive end. And we talked about how the
Yes.
Celtics
Yeah.
needed to make him actively defend, which is what the Timberwolves didn't. And boy, did they make him actively defend.
Yes.
They made him actively defend so much that he stopped actively defending and just let people blow by him pretty much on every possession and made his team play 4-on-5. So I think the biggest takeaway for me on the Luka perspective is he needs to get more engaged on the defensive end, almost kind of like Steph Curry. Steph Curry at the beginning of his career was a bad defender. But
Yeah.
as more time went on, as he kind of realized this is what I need to do if I want to go down as an all-time great and win championships, he became an average to slightly above average defender. And I think that's the next step Luka needs to take. Everyone knows the skills, the shooting from 35 feet. That's fine. Now you got to make yourself not a net negative on the defensive end.
Yeah. And then the other thing on the other side of the ball, the Celtics, that crew is specifically Tatum, Brown. For now, the last 3 or 4 years, it was the narrative was, can they get it done together? Are they the group that's going to be done in Boston? And now that monkey is off their backs, where they're kind of playing with the house's money. Like you said, they're signed for next year, that now they can kind of play freely together. If there was any tense up, or are we the option in Boston? They are. They get it done. They go down as kind of legends in the city, and I think that's something to watch, is they're still so young, and with the monkey off their back, can they turn this into a run or a dynasty?
I think it might be tough just given the new rules that have come in the last couple of years with the whole second apron and what you are or not able to do once you hit those super luxury tax levels. I think, and that's not necessarily a fault of their own. If it's just a product of where they've showed up. The NBA doesn't want dynasties. They want more of an NFL style parity of, hey, you've got your 3, 4 year run. Congratulations, you got a title. Get out of here. It's time for the next team with a 3, 4 year run. So
Right.
more power to them if they can do it. I just think that with some of the financial rules and with some of the not even financial, maybe more of the team building restrictions that get placed onto you once you get into that second apron, I think it'll make it tough for them to consistently do that. But like you said, you can win a second one. Before that, you got the guys here for now. But I think afterwards, when you get into the 3, 4, which is what you usually look for when it comes to dynasties, we'll see.
Yeah, but I think it is easier still in the NBA than the NFL, just because
Oh,
those the
absolutely.
career is a lot longer. Like you have a Jason Tatum, like I said, that's 26, Jaylen Brown 27. Like they're very much in their prime, and they're 7, 8 years into their careers now.
I don't disagree. It's just those two guys are going to be taking.
$500 million contracts.
Yes, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't know what contracts they're signed for right now, and or what they're going to be eligible for, considering they do make all NBA teams and they've got all this stuff. But they'll be on Supermaxes, and I'm sure when it comes around and it comes time to pay them, they'll both sit there and it's like, oh well, shit, 70% of our salary cap is tied to two players. So that's kind of my thing.
I feel like Brown just got signed, but I want to say Tatum's got 1 more year. I could be wrong, but I think that's what I remember
Well, they'll
seeing.
have to pay him. So we'll see. But I think the last thing I want to say with the NBA is, I guess the Pistons fired Monty Williams this morning. That's can you imagine making
Wow, that's news
$75 million?
to me.
What? Oh, you didn't hear about this?
No.
Yeah, they fired him this morning. So he made 75 or he will make $75 million as the contract gets paid out to work for 9 months. That's a hell of a gig.
Could that the highest paid coach in the league only lasting 1 year can only happen to one franchise, the
Yeah.
Detroit Pistons?
There you go. The most poverty franchise ever. The only thing I'll say though, and I actually don't
Should
mind the
we
fight.
like go down how many million he got per win in that contract? I think he made what is that, 7 mil a win?
What did we win? 14. We won 14 games, right?
I was saying like a 10 or 11, so 14. So a
I
little
don't know.
less
Maybe
than
we
seven.
won less than that. I don't remember our final record. All I was gonna say is I am a fan of the firing because I think that this allows the new GM Langdon to actually pick a guy that he wants. And I guess
Agreed.
like we'll see if that's actually what happens, if Tom Gores does Tom Gores things and steps in and says, hey, come out to my home in California because I'm never going to actually visit Michigan again. And I'll give you a nice interview and then I'll make a decision. If something like that happens, then so be it. Whatever. No, yet another kind of feather in the cap of the worst owner in American sports history. And we'll see. But I am optimistic in the sense that they might be able to do it the right way, in the sense of you find a general manager, he finds a coach who shares his vision for how he wants to build and run a team. And then you go and execute that vision. So we'll see what
Yeah,
they do.
I agree with that. But again, nothing's changing
No,
big picture
they're
without
going
Tom
nowhere.
Gore.
This team will be in
So,
the lottery for another 5 years. Fucking bums.
which is crazy. When's
Yeah.
the last, what was the last 2018?
Oh, I think they made the playoffs in 2019.
2019. Okay.
Or I guess the spring of 19. So that was the 18-19 season. Because I
Okay.
don't think they were in any playoffs during the COVID year. As a matter of fact, I can guarantee they were not in the playoffs in the COVID year. So the 18-19 season is, I think, the last time that we were kind of competent, if you will.
Crazy.
Yeah, go basketball, but
Well, it's not even like the it's not even like a Tigers where they're bad, but they're not the bottom, or like the Wings this past year where they're, not good, but are not a playoff team, but like middle of the pack, I guess. For those 5 years since that 2019, they've been literally the worst team in the league pretty much all of those years.
yeah. Is what it is. The last thing that we were going to cover, I mentioned it last week, is
Soccer.
the some soccer. The Euros have started. Copa America starts on Thursday, but I don't think I'm going to have as much coverage on that as I will with the Euros, just because the teams there are less exciting and it's not as big in terms of number of teams wise. So I
Does
guess.
Copa America include South America, like
Well,
Brazil
Copa
is?
America is South America. It typically doesn't include the North American teams. I don't know
Oh, really?
why they had the US host it this year and why they brought in some of the other North American teams like a Canada, Mexico, and Jamaica.
Oh, so they haven't been like US, Canada, and Mexico aren't in it before, but they're just now in it
They're
this
well, I
year.
mean, like they're typically not. Like typically, the Copa America is for South America. What North America has is the, I think they call it the Gold Cup, but it's a fucking joke of a tournament because
Yeah,
it
it's like
gets
what, four
it's
countries?
I mean, I think they have eight, but even that, like four of them are auto eliminated. It just starts with Mexico, USA, and then some variation of Canada, Honduras, and Costa Rica, and Jamaica. Those four teams fight for two spots. But that's not what we're talking about. So I'm not going to sit here and go game by game for the Euros just because this is the group stage and so much can change. But I'll just kind of talk about some of the entertaining or the entertainment because. This European tournament to me has been one of the more refreshing things that I've kind of witnessed in soccer in recent memory, just because the last couple tournaments, so for European teams specifically, the 2022 World Cup, while that was post-COVID, it was in Qatar, in a place where not as many fans went to, and your support for that was not as great. But the year before that, they had a half-assed Europe. They had a half-assed version of the Euros where they played all throughout the continent in Europe, and they were at kind of like 50% capacity for some of those games. So once again, not great fan support. You have to go all the way back to 2018, where European teams have been able to have all of the fans that they can have present at the games, present in the cities, present in the stadiums, and it shows the 50-50 split, or sometimes even more, depending on who's playing. I mean, there's been games where the first game, Croatia, Spain, the Croatians were like 95% of the stadium just to watch their team get their shit
Wow.
rocked. You've had some great back and forth between fans. The Romania-Ukraine game, great back and forth with fans. Turkey-Georgia yesterday was incredible. Croatia-Albania today, great support. The Scotland-Switzerland today, great. So it's just been very, very fun. And I think the players kind of being able to feed off that has made it more entertaining. The actual soccer itself is great because these teams suck. I think I talked to you a little bit about it, where on the international level, you can't go buy a new right back because you don't like the right back you have.
Right.
You can't buy other players. You have what your country has produced in that set 2 year span. And I think that makes it so much more enjoyable because it's carnage. These teams are awful. The players, some of these players, you're like, who the fuck is this guy? Where is he playing? How is he here? Some of the mistakes they make are fun. There's not. I think the other thing that I love about international soccer is because they only see each other for a couple weeks at a time, and it's only a couple times throughout the year. There isn't enough volume for coaches to sit there and kind of fully absorb what. And maybe not absorb, but maybe control what the players do, the way a Manchester City plays at the club level, where your passing patterns are predetermined. You've sat there, you've drilled this into this player's head. You're not doing this. We need you to do this. And it just allows the players to show their quality. It's just more of talent doing things that talent does as opposed to the system is going to do it. We're going to walk the ball into the goal. It's so much fun. You've got these absolute characters. You had in the first game of the no second game of the tournament, it was Hungary, Switzerland. So Hungary has this guy come off the bench, and he looked like a linebacker. I mean, you could have slapped Luke Kuechly's face on over that guy's face, and you said, "Yeah, that checks out." He was built like a mountain. It's like, how is this guy a forward? How is he a soccer player? He comes in, he hammers some guy very first 50-50 challenge. It's more of the it's more of an emotional game. It's more of a you're just kind of you're riding your highs and lows. You feed off the crowd. You have just it's carnage. It's chaos. It's beautiful to watch. So I know you
Now,
told me.
with the
Sorry, go ahead.
current chaos, do you have like kind of who's emerged as the favorite so far? Who do you like overall, though?
I mean, it's only been one game in the group stage, so I can't really sit here and pretend like
Yeah.
these teams have shown so much. But I mean, it's the teams you'd expect. Your Germany is hosts, France, England, maybe the Portuguese finally decide to put it together. But I think it's too early to tell. You probably have to see how the bracket gets finalized because there's no really draws at this point. It's all it, once the kind of the standings happen, it's all predetermined after there. So I would probably be able to give better favorites and better stuff like that next week. I think we should also know a little bit more about who's going to be playing who and when the individual games matter more. But from a very quick impression, the Croatians have been god awful. They've played twice. They have one loss in kind of bad fashion to Spain, losing 3-0, and they have one tie today to Albania, which was very, very crushing for their kind of chances to go forward. They're still alive, but they have to beat Italy. Other than that, I mean, the Germans have looked good. They played twice, but they played kind of the shit teams in their group, and they are hosts, so like it's a little bit easier for them to play good and look good. So
Yep.
I don't know. It's just I'll probably reserve the right to talk further about individual teams until next week, just when they've all played their second or perhaps third game as well. But it's been a breath of fresh air. You have being able to have both sets of fans in the stadium, I think also helps because obviously what during the regular course of your season, you're playing a home game or an away game. And that's obviously great. Those home fans are great, but I think there's something with the fans almost feeding off each other of, hey, I just heard the Albanian fans go crazy for 5 minutes with a chant. Now it's our turn. We got to outdo them. So I love seeing that. I love the fact that unlike some other cup finals, quote unquote, where tickets are allocated and you've got 10,000 fans on one side, 10,000 fans on the other, and the other 40,000 fans are all corporate sponsors who don't give a rat's ass about the game. This is all true passion, true people going there to support their country. So it's been a lot of fun. I enjoy killing time at work watching these games, and I just look forward to more.
Yeah. Now is it what is so is this event every other year typically?
Well, it's every 4 years, but the calendars all kind of intertwine. So like you have your World Cup every 4 years. This is on a 2 year cycle split off from it. So it'll be every 4 years, and then your World Cup's every 4 years. It's kind of like your winter and your summer Olympics, if you will.
What do they try and do it in an Olympic year like this year?
No, I mean there's no try. It's every 4 years.
Okay.
It just rolls over. I guess COVID kind of fucked up 2020, but I don't think anyone really could have predicted
Because they're
that.
going to
So,
roll right into it. Like, it's almost good for the Olympics. They're going to roll right into the Olympics, the teams that qualify, right?
well, that's different because in Olympic soccer, I forget the exact reason. I think there's some political problems where the IOC doesn't want to give up control to FIFA. So most of the time, Olympic teams are comprised of young players. I think the rule is you only get three players, or you can only use three players over the age of 23 for your Olympic team. So like sure there will be guys like in like you they'll be like you'll watch France at the Olympics, but it won't be the same France team you see here.
Okay. Fair enough. That's interesting. That's kind of like the hockey, how like the NHL wouldn't let the players go for the longest time.
Yeah, I mean I just think that's a perfect comparison. Like it's not that the players well actually sometimes the players can't go because like I know one of the big topics was, is Mbappe going to play in the home Olympics? And the president really wanted him to, and he apparently really wanted to, and then Real Madrid was like, "No, nah, we pay your wages. You're not playing. No damn
Mm.
good. You're coming to win some games for us." So
I
there.
see both sides of that too.
No, I mean, look,
Just
like,
on the club.
yeah, but I mean, it's a contract. If you want to play for the
Right.
team, that they not I'm not gonna say they own you, but they get to determine what you do or don't do, especially if you're gonna be trying to play a sport that they pay you to play for them for someone else. So
Yeah.
I like I said, I understand why the French would want Mbappe to play for their team in the Olympics as they're hosting it. And I understand Real Madrid's point of, hey man, we're paying you for something. You're already playing in the Euros. You already broke your nose, so we're not going to keep risking injury.
Yeah. Well, that's and it's, I don't know, to that feeds the Olympic schedule feeds into their club schedule, right?
I mean, it so feeds in is maybe a tough way where I forget what are the dates of the Olympics? Isn't it like late July to late August, give or take?
Usually, like, yeah, I was gonna say like early, I was gonna say early August to mid-August,
Yeah, so I don't know
but that
what the
sounds better.
ex I don't know what the exact kind of length of the Olympic schedule is and what the exact length of what the soccer schedule would be, but for those players, I mean, usually teams are back and they begin their preseason training in the middle of July. And I want to say Real Madrid's first official game is middle of August, so can't have some guy playing off in the Olympics as you've got a La Liga game because that matters for you.
Right. Yeah, I was again trying to make the comparison to the NHL because that's dead in the middle of their season.
Yeah, it's just tough. Like I said, when you have prime example, the Olympics, when the IOC doesn't want to give up control to another governing body and they just decide, you know what, we'll go with whatever people give us, and here's the teams, here's a nice little flag on your jersey, go play. I understand why they don't want to give up the control, but it's also a little annoying that we can't have all of it kind of work out perfectly and let's let the
Yeah.
best players play in the Olympics.
Yeah. I think it's forever going to go back and forth because
Oh,
the
absolutely.
NHL, I know the NHL is switching back to allowing them after not for the last 10 years. So, and I'm sure it'll switch back at some point. It's
Yep.
just all bargaining power.
Yep.
That's anything else on Europa before we kind of wrap this episode up?
No, like I said, I'll be able to talk a little bit more specifically about team by team and talk about disappointments and success stories as they played more games, just because what am I supposed to say after one of three games? You can't do much there. So
Right.
I talked a little bit about the
Agreed.
style of soccer, the entertainment there, the fact that kind of people are willing to try things, and we'll get more specific as we see more from the teams.
Cool. So that's all I got for this episode. Pretty good episode here. Next week, we'll have more Europa. We'll finish up the Stanley Cup, and we'll kind of have to get into some miscellaneous topics as we roll through the summer here. So as Vladdy usually says, if you made it this far, we love you. Hugs and kisses. Vladdy, I'll let you close this one off.
Go international soccer, I guess.